This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Child sex trafficking not only exists in foreign countries, it's a big problem in the United States as well. And Ohio is among the worst in the country for child sex trafficking, according to the Cincinnati Inquirer and a report from the Ohio Attorney General's office. Around 1,000 children, many of whom are in their middle school years, are forced into the sex trade each year in Ohio. Joining us to talk about child sex trafficking in Greater Cincinnati and ways to help its victims are Program Manager for Anti-Human Trafficking at the Salvation Army, Aaron Meyer, Hamilton County Job and Family Services Director, Maura Ware, and the Director of Lighthouse Shakely Center for Youth, John Kiefer. And you can be part of the discussion, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And John, Maura, and Aaron, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Maura, how big of a problem is child sex trafficking in the Cincinnati area?
Well, we're seeing it more and more as time goes on. I mean, we had a great opportunity to form a partnership actually with the Salvation Army and the Mayerson Center in Hamilton County back in August of 2013 when we really started to say we had to figure out how to really address this issue. And we certainly see it more in terms of the sex prostituting young children and the parents are either selling their children or they're ending up here. And initially, it's hard for us sometimes to actually identify these cases because they're difficult to really identify. There's a lot of secretive behavior, and it's really hard to figure out what's going on. So sometimes we don't often know that we're involved in that kind of a case, and we actually reach out to our partners quickly, particularly Salvation Army, to help us figure out to really identify that and then work with the children and then try to identify who the parents are. But we're seeing more and more cases each day.
Aaron? What's your perspective?
Yeah, the partnership with Jobs and Family Services and Lighthouse and other organizations that have been serving this population is imperative to the identification of these victims. As Moira said, it is really changing over time in terms of who's being identified, what those numbers are, because the more different agencies and different service providers are learning about how to identify it, the more numbers we're getting. So it's not that all of a sudden we're seeing these skyrocketing numbers of trafficking because there's more trafficking, but more that more and more law enforcement is not using the term child prostitution, but instead calling it sex trafficking of a minor, and that service providers are identifying it as such. We're seeing the risk factors when a child is being screened through foster care, through other programs, through Jobs and Family Services and other social service agencies. In terms of numbers, we've been working with the juvenile courts, and we've had over the past, I'd say, 6 to 8 months or so, we've seen approximately 20 cases that have come through that court system. So that's not to say that there's 20 cases in the Cincinnati area, but it's to say that in Hamilton County, the courts have been, and some of the other providers have been a part of identifying these potential cases, and they've reached kind of the level of thinking that that's likely what it is and have been moved to the child advocacy centers to get an interview and have been engaged with law enforcement. It's about 20, but it increases every month. We get new referrals and we're learning more and more in new agencies that are saying, hey, I've been working with this kid for the past 6 months and I just didn't think about that being a trafficking situation. And now that I know what trafficking is, I think this person might be being victimized that way. And so we're getting those calls more and more often. So 20 is kind of a rough number, but certainly not the number to suggest that that's what's happening in this community, but more more just kind of a demonstration of what we're learning and what the types of numbers are that we're seeing through more official channels.
So what you're seeing is you're seeing more recognition and more awareness of this issue.
Yes.
Well, I'd agree with both of you. I think they've done an excellent job in educating the public, and I think they would agree that the numbers that are reported are low, but we know that there's much more that are out there, and I think it's starting to come to light because of education, educating law enforcement, educating the community, all the parties that are involved with young people. And I know for Lighthouse, our particular roles, we see people all the way up from age 0 to 24. And in my work, we deal a lot with the exploitation of homeless and runaway youth who are typically sexually exploited on the streets I believe the Attorney General said last year the statistics was for any youth that's on the street, they'll usually be approached by a handler within 48 hours. And so that's where our work comes into play, because we're working on the streets with those people who would be considered homeless.
So the traffickers are targeting homeless children, that is what you're finding?
They're the most vulnerable to be exploited. You know, obviously they're trying to find a way to survive. Where do I live tonight? How do I eat? So they're easy prey. They're easy victims on the streets. And of course, like any young person, they want to be loved. And unfortunately, they find out that the person who's approaching them doesn't really love them. They may appear to be the person wearing the white hat, so to speak. But by the time they find out that it's not the good guy, it's usually too late.
How widespread a problem is this, John? Is this just something strictly you see in urban settings, or is it more widespread than that?
I think that's the myth and the fallacy, is that it's more of an urban issue. You know, the unfortunate aspect is last year, and Aaron would support this, and so would you, Maura, about 80% of the prostitution, I hate saying that term, but the prostitution-related offenses, the arrests were of women. So it shows there's a great disparity in a gender bias. And that, to me, says that most of the pimps, johns, handlers are not being arrested. And so it's the women who tend to be the victims as far as being arrested. I think it's much larger if you expand the definition, which everybody agrees that those who are engaged in sex work are considered trafficking victims. I believe that. I believe they're victims. And so I think when you expand that definition, it's much broader than we all realize and think. Not what we realize. We know this to be true. But trying to convince the public that this isn't an inner city issue. This is a every neighborhood issue.
And I think, you know, going off of what John said, it really depends on the landscape of the community. So when you're thinking about here in Cincinnati, you know, we have what we call tracks. So areas where commercial sex is solicited off the street. It's an urban area. The cars are driving by. There are sidewalks. But if you go to a more suburban area where there aren't sidewalks, clearly the traffickers aren't going to have as much opportunity to make money if it's more of a red flag or so to see someone standing out on someone's lawn, so to speak. So instead, in those communities, we're seeing trafficking in the hotels. So individuals using online ads, whether that's Backpage or Craigslist or other types of online advertising to set up dates for those that are being victimized, the pimps setting up the dates in hotels. So it's not that the trafficking doesn't exist in different communities. It just might look a little bit different depending on where you are. And also when we're talking about labor trafficking, we certainly are seeing cases, and I know we've worked with Jobs and Family Services on some of these cases of labor trafficking, particularly domestic servitude of minors. And that certainly is something that we see in the suburbs and in the city.
So there's sex trafficking, then there's labor trafficking. Are there any other forms of child trafficking?
Those are the only types of forms that are defined by the federal definition of the trafficking law. Yeah.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And Moira, why do kids become victims of this? I mean, how are they ensnared by these traffickers? John was touching on that a little bit, but how exactly does this happen?
Well, I think John's correct. I mean, a lot of times these kids, I mean, first of all, it's a very vulnerable population, particularly children that are in foster care. They're vulnerable. Also, we've seen children come here because their parents have actually sold them, thinking they would come here, they could make some money, they could have a better life, and they end up in the hands of somebody that's not there, it's well-intentioned. So they, they think that they, I think John said it really well, they look to somebody, they see this adult, somebody that's going to take care of them, that's going to care for them. But very quickly, the person starts to take control. They control their money. They control their living space. They don't necessarily have their own phone. I mean, they really kind of start to isolate them, and then they instill fear. So the child is going to do whatever they can do to either be fed, to sleep tonight, to be safe. And that's just kind of how they get in that position.
Go ahead, Aaron.
I was just going to add, and there was we don't know a lot about the statistics as just in general on this type of crime. It's a relatively new crime, and as we talked about earlier, more and more people are learning how to define it appropriately, and so it. As that changes and as more and more people are learning, we're seeing more and more of these cases being identified. But there was a research study that was done a few years ago now by Dr. Celia Williamson, and it was done in the state of Ohio where they surveyed individuals that were engaging in commercial sex and asked several questions. Many of them identified that they had engaged in commercial sex before they were 18, so when they were minors. And when they asked them a series of questions, they learned a lot. Some of the things that we've talked about here, about many of them were runaway and homeless, qualified as runaway and homeless youth. The vast majority had had some sort of intersection with Department of Family or Child Protective Services, whether that was they had been in foster care or their families had been investigated for neglect. And national studies suggest that the vast majority of sex trafficking victims were abused prior, and this study supported that in Ohio, prior to their engagement in a sex trafficking situation. So whether that was sexual assault, domestic violence, child abuse, on some level, some studies say 75%, some studies say 80%, the majority of individuals that are being solicited as children or recruited as children to engage in commercial sex are survivors of abuse. And so, you know, that goes to what John was saying. If you're running away from something and someone's offering you a loving and caring home, that seems like a real good opportunity when the only other option is going back home to abuse or to an unsafe situation. Someone's now offering you a better option, a safer option, what seems like a healthier and more supportive option, and it's a typical and common recruitment strategy of the trafficker.
So the trafficker comes along and says, "I can give you a better life," and you're so desperate at that point, you say, "Sure."
Is that not always a better life? Just, hey, you look lost. You know, where are you going to stay tonight? And that's a reality that many of the young people face is, where am I going to sleep tonight? The streets are scary. You can go at any of the transportation sites around town and just look for some young person getting off of one of those transportation vehicles. They look lost. So if you look at it from the handler's perspective, that's your prime target. And so someone's trying to figure out, how do I navigate around town? It can be scary out on the street, so they're looking for somebody. You show up with a nice smile and a good sales pitch is what it comes out to. But the next thing you know, before you know it, you're kind of entangled into this life and you've bought into it. And all kids want to have a family, you know, whether they admit it or not. Any family is better than no family. And so,
and traffickers oftentimes use that word. They call the life, the family. They call them the family. The other girls or women or sometimes boys who are also being exploited, either all living in the same household or just somehow connected under that same trafficker, they call it the family. And sometimes it's a stranger that's recruiting. Sometimes it's someone that the person is familiar with. Now, familiarity can be different for all forms. So maybe they've when they were running away from an abusive situation at home, or they'd leave for a day, they would hang out at the library. Now it's their fourth or fifth time standing outside the library or out by the bus station, and they've seen this same guy over and over. And now this fifth time that he offers and says, "You're ready for a place to stay," that now he seems like a safe and a familiar person.
John, are there certain parts of town where the kids gravitate to, where this is happening more frequently?
Well, I think it's hard to pick a particular place because it's very different. I think we all want to hit the hot spots. There's certain streets around town that we all want to say, you know. And again, I hate using this word prostitution, but it's what people come to know, and they pick these areas. There's a whole other culture that we don't see. I spent about 2 hours last week with someone, and we actually were working with Aaron who's engaged in sexual exploitation, who started to explain to me about how the suburban culture of using bitcoins because now you can't use credit cards on Backpage and Craigslist because they've caught on. So now they're going to a Bitcoin system. There's a review site. And it's pretty amazing how smart everyone's getting and how business savvy they're becoming. So what you see on the streets typically, in my opinion, are those who well, they all have a multitude of issues and diagnosis out there. But what you're seeing, really more older people who are engaged in the sexual exploitation, typically probably more deeper addicted to alcohol and drugs or other some type of narcotic. But I hate to pinpoint an area because it's bought and sold everywhere. There was a gentleman from Toledo who's sort of the class or the Craigslist Backpage guru. And he was able to track the IP addresses of the buyers of these services. And they were coming from your wealthier neighborhoods. They weren't coming from your over the Rhine or the places that tend to get the stigma. But that's because that's what we all see because we drive through it. But there's a whole another world that's in the dark that we don't see because, as Aaron said, it's not on the front lawn and it's not on their driveways. It's done on the internet. It's done in hotels.
And it sounds like the online world has changed this. A great deal.
Oh, yeah.
And recruitment happens a lot. When you're talking about where do you see it and where do either where do you see the commercial sex happening or where do you see the recruitment happening, it's kind of anywhere, and it depends on the community. You know, sometimes it is in a place where you see kids hang out, whether that's the mall or where you might see runaways, whether that's the bus station. But sometimes it's Facebook. Sometimes it's, you know, an online server through your school even. You know, when we're talking about families and we're talking about recruitment, sometimes it's other women who are being forced to not only engage in commercial sex but forced to recruit other victims, whether that's through the school or through connections at the mall, or again, anywhere that might be. Maybe it's on Facebook, but that recruitment does happen. We've seen recruitment happening through online dating sites. So it really does depend on the person, and traffickers, unfortunately, they work hard to find out what is the most appropriate pitch, as John was saying, to recruit somebody. So they want to fill a need, whatever that need may be, and so they work hard to, I don't want to say they work hard, but they take their time to build that for each individual.
We will continue our conversation about child sex trafficking, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss child sex trafficking in Greater Cincinnati and ways to help its victims, our program manager for anti-human trafficking at the Salvation Army, Aaron Meyer, Hamilton County Job and Family Services Director Moira Ware, and the director of Lighthouse Shakely Center for Youth, John Kiefer. You can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Moira, are kids in the foster care system more at risk of being preyed upon by traffickers? And what does Job and Family Services do to educate foster parents and kids to help protect them?
Well, as Aaron and John have both said, children, we deal with a very vulnerable population. So once we get, you know, the children come to us, they've already experienced an event of abuse or neglect or some form of trauma. So that makes them vulnerable. And certainly we talk to them when they're in foster care about that. When we're talking about leaving the system, aging out, or, you know, preparing for adulthood, we also want to work with them about being aware of what the surrounding could be when they get out there. Because oftentimes these children, when they do age out of our system, have no families to support them. So they are vulnerable in that nature, and they're looking for someone, as I think both of Aaron and John have referenced, that they're looking for family, somewhere to fit in, someone to feel loved by, so they could be, you know, they're going to be attractive to somebody that's preying on those their need to feel loved and cared for.
And I know that for our part with training, we do work with Jobs and Family Services. They have their own training that goes through their typical training systems. We've worked with their staff before to talk about kind of what it looks like when someone's engaging with our program, because we partner so frequently. And also we've worked with several of the different foster care, private foster care agencies, and they've reached out to request trainings and learn more about how to identify trafficking among those that they're serving or that they're working with, those kids, and what resources there are out there. There's been a lot of great initiatives through the state, whether that's the Attorney General's office or the Governor's office or through state legislation that's passed over the past few years that's really emphasized the need for that training and that understanding of how to identify it and how to respond. And that study that I referenced about Dr. Celia Williamson, that was part of that influence as well, because it really demonstrated that there were a lot of opportunities to engage, that because we didn't know we were seeing it, we didn't know to respond. And then the more people are learning, the more they can be identifying it and getting that person help either before they're recruited or before the life kind of takes hold, and then there's that opportunity to kind of get help from the beginning.
Aaron, tell us a little bit more about the services and the programs that you're offering to the Salvation Army to help deal with this.
Sure. So the Salvation Army kind of has a unique perspective in this community, in that we're the anti-human trafficking program for the greater Cincinnati area, the Southwest Ohio area. We are kind of the point for all types of trafficking. So we serve labor trafficking victims, sex trafficking victims, adults, children, U.S. citizens, foreign nationals, men, women, individuals who identify as trans. And so we serve kind of the gamut, but then we work with, we rely heavily on our partner agencies to kind of provide the vast majority of services. So we provide case management. We have a 24-hour hotline that individuals can access either to report or to just get access to services, or we'd less often do people self-identify as victims, but they may say they need help. They're not sure yet what they need help on, but they may say that they need help, and we can connect them to services. But then we rely on partner agencies like Lighthouse Youth Services, Jobs and Family Services, for the adults, programs like Off the Streets, First Step Home. I could list many, many, but we rely on a lot of different other agencies to kind of help as a team. We work together to provide those services because they're really – so many of those getting out of the life and who are looking to get help need support, and need support from different people who can provide different things. And so no one agency can really serve as the only provider for all the services needed. So we work with partner agencies. Some, you know, Lighthouse may provide counseling, or may Shakely Center may be the place for someone to stay, or someone may need substance abuse treatment and they may go to Children's, or they may go to Passages with Talbert House to get that treatment. So it really depends on the needs of the individual, but we work with lots of different partner agencies to help coordinate that system. And the big thing that we can provide is that we have the 24-hour hotline, and we have the luxury at this time to not have a time limit for engagement, so we can really provide that that continuity of care. So we can be with you from when the police pick you up or when you first get out of jail, through Lighthouse, through transitioning into independent living, through working with foster care and at JFS, and maybe not being the primary the whole time, but being kind of that consistent face.
John, tell us about the services that your organization offers.
Well, I think I'm very fortunate that I work with an agency that has some tenure and history when it comes to working with young people, and I have great leadership. Bob Meekum has been there since the start, as far as I know. Allows us to be creative and out of the box in some of the projects we do. And like Aaron said, no program's an island. We have great partnerships, as she's mentioned, and we've been able to form other great relationships with the Attorney General's office. Our Sheriff, Jim Neal, and Police Chief Elliot Isaac have been wonderful assets in this effort. My particular section deals with the victimization of homeless young people and young adults, but Lighthouse works from birth to the age of 24, so we run the gamut with the foster care program. And so we have a pretty deep wealth of knowledge when it comes to adolescent behavior, growth, and needs. And so I'm very fortunate that I deal with young, transition-age young adults and the street work. But, again, we're not an island. We have great partners. And Aaron and I have collaborated on many things where, quite frankly, we had somebody who self-identified. We weren't really sure. We brought Aaron in. And we worked together in a triage mode to say, and sometimes she said, nope, this isn't it. So we do what we do, and that is housing, and how can we help you out and overcome barriers. And then recently we had somebody that was from out of town that ended up with us and said, hey, this is what's reporting. Let's work on this together. What can we all offer for the betterment of the young person? And that's really the great aspect about all of this is that I don't think anybody alone could handle this. This does require all of us working together. When I got hired to work with kids, you know, they said, please come and work with us with homeless kids. And I thought, oh, okay, I can do that. I've worked with young people. When you open up this umbrella, all these subsections come down of, you know, drug addictions, foster care, LGBTQ youth, and all the gamut there. And so it requires one person can't know, be an expert on all of this. So it really requires a whole team of jacks of all trades and experts.
513-419-7100 to join us in our conversation. And Stephanie in Clifton is going to join us now. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I just want to make the comment, I'm new to Cincinnati, and I've actually started kind of my own mission where I get donations from clients that I have through my business and have been trying to just go directly to the streets and pass out clothing to people. But the comment I wanted to make, I've been doing a lot of reading on the history of Cincinnati, and this is really nothing new. Back in the turn of the century, they were called street urchins, children just, you know, homeless, helpless, and out on the streets, you know, at the age of 8 and 9 years old, walking off with strangers just for the promise of a piece of candy. I myself am on my way to Lighthouse right now to donate some clothing. But that,
Lighthouse appreciates that.
Yes, I donate to Mary Magdalene. I just recently discovered the Men's Drop-In Center over the weekend and took some clothing down there. But the thing that I find when I'm out talking to homeless folks is that they're not aware of the services. So I try to steer them towards help that they need, you know, through Mary Magdalene, you know, the Prince of Peace, you know, places like that, DeSales that offers meals, you know, three times a week, things like that. But what I find is that folks just don't know where the services are available, and I would love just a basic brochure of who offers what, when, and where. To hand out to folks, you know, to say that, you know, well, on Monday at noon, you can go over here and get a free lunch. Like I said, I just discovered the Men's Drop-In Center over the weekend. I had no idea that existed. So I'm just trying to, you know, do what I can on a daily basis to just hand out what I can to folks directly. And then when I can't find anyone to do that, then that's when I start, you know, just rotating where I drop things off.
Stephanie, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it, Stephanie. Thank you.
Well, I would say, Stephanie, first, thanks for your generosity and your kindness. You're sort of living out St. Francis in the real world. And I'd also offer up the VA has a book that is, it's quite a task to copy, but it lists every service in the city. We keep it at our facility, so we give it to clients, and you know, part of what we do is teach them to be autonomous and to help themselves in their case plan. But the VA has that book, and then Aaron and I, many years ago, along with a bunch of other partners, worked on putting a little card that every law enforcement officer in this county has. It's a referral card, and if you're a runaway, if you're in trafficking, if you have a mental health issue, if you're this age, and it's got some quick numbers, and we're always willing to share those cards. If people call and ask, we'll get handouts to them.
And I think John brings up a great point that, you know, we're kind of there's kind of different classifications of resources, and we certainly don't want to reinvent the wheel. We use the VA resource all the time. 211 is another great resource. And then, I mean, when you're talking about trafficking or someone who you think might be being trafficked or might be being sexually exploited, even if you're not sure, you can always call the 24-hour hotline, which is 513-800-1863. And that's an opportunity. We can give referrals from there. But if you're looking for just homeless resources or a place to stay, there's also 381 Safe. But that VA resources and 211 are great resources for just overall, this is where the food pantries are, this is where the homeless shelters are. But if you ever think someone's in danger, obviously always call 911, because that is the immediate responder. And if it's a minor, you should also call 2-for-1 Kids.
What do you think? Do you think people are aware of the situation? You think it's something that people aren't aware of?
I'm always surprised how many people are not aware, or they don't think it's happening within our community. And
it's something happening in L.A. or New York,
yes,
or someplace else,
people,
right?
Yes, people don't realize it's happening. So I'm always surprised when people are like, "Oh, I had no idea that would happen." But I think programs like this are great because you're raising the awareness, and then people. I mean, I think we've all said it. It's really hard to identify because there's a lot of shame and guilt, and people want to cover that up. But the more we educate ourselves about it, and the more you are in tune to what's maybe happening in your neighborhood, the helpful, you know, it is. And just to echo what Aaron said, please always feel free to call 2-for-1 Kids if you feel like a child is, you know, in a situation that you're just not sure and you want to talk through it. We'd be happy to try to help you resolve that, or else make the referral.
Moira, has the legal system started to change the way it views the children who are caught up in child sex trafficking?
Yeah, I think they definitely have, but I think, you know, we're still challenged in the child welfare system to really identify it correctly. I mean, we struggle. We really rely on the experts like Aaron and John to help us do that. So it certainly is. I think, you know, we're all sort of taking pause now and looking at cases differently and making sure we have all the information, whereas, you know, maybe 5 or 10 years ago we would have made different assumptions and taken a different track. But really, it's the partnerships that we have, and also I think the legal community is just as much learning as we all are learning in terms of how to manage these cases, because they're complex. There's no easy answer. There's lots of issues. There's usually, as you know, John said, there's mental health, there's substance abuse, there's violence. There's just lots of different, you know, I always say it's like peeling back an onion, kind of figuring out what's really going on.
And a few years ago, well, now it's just called the Safe Harbor Law, but the Safe Harbor Law was passed, introduced by Representative Teresa Fetter, and that that classified this section for minors specifically, so that if someone was thought to be a sex trafficking victim, instead of being sentenced to a jail sentence, they would be given access to diversion. And so that's looked a little bit different in every community, and every community throughout the state, really county, has really been working to kind of figure out what that means for them. I know in Franklin County, they started a specialty docket. They did so in Summit County and a couple other counties throughout Ohio. Down here in the Southwest Ohio region, there's been a couple different counties who have kind of been exploring what that looks like, including Hamilton, Butler, and Warren. All three of those have kind of been exploring what that might look like. And that really gives a structured legal remedy of if law enforcement identifies somebody, okay. Because as Moira was saying, it's kind of a changing perspective. So some people are still getting arrested for soliciting commercial sex even under the age of 15, even though under the federal and state statute, that's considered sex trafficking, not a crime. But as we're learning more and more about what those laws look like, and as our law enforcement is learning, as our prosecutors are learning, there's this kind of safe harbor element to kind of create that buffer so that diversion can be provided instead of jail sentence, as we're all figuring out the terminology and learning a new perspective.
Yeah, well, part of the terminology used to be child prostitution. That's starting to disappear, though, isn't it, John?
I believe so. I'm really proud of the people that we work with, you know, and even myself, you know, an old dog learning new tricks. And to change that terminology, I'm with a team that have boots on the ground in some of these neighborhoods, and words have meaning and they have power. And so I think it's important that we all understand this. And I would go toe-to-toe with anybody to argue about any of the young ladies and young men who are involved in being sexually exploited, that they are victims. They truly don't have a choice. They don't have a lot of controls on where they live, where they stay, for a lot of various reasons. And so I think just the work that everybody's done here to get the definition and the words changed, that alone is a huge milestone, especially in the law enforcement community. And since I was a part of that for a long time, there's many things I did as a police officer that nowadays you just think, wow, you know, how far we've come in our own knowledge.
We had a caller who wanted to know if you could name the VA booklet you were talking about and how someone can get a hold of that.
Google might be. I mean, not to be. I know when I found
or
it first.
211.
Right, 211. The United
yes.
Way has a great resource there through 211. That's more if you're looking for one specific resource and you need kind of a list of things. That's a number. I believe it's toll free. I'm not sure, but it's I don't think it gives you additional charges. But if you're looking for like the packet, if you just kind of Google the VA homeless resource, I think is what it is.
Yeah, I know we've got received it online because mm-hmm. it's pretty massive. It's, you know, a few hundred pages.
Right.
And so we keep it around so we can share a page or two. But you can Google it, Veterans Association. I forget the name of it, but I think the best way is to tell people to call 211.
Yes.
So we'll continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon, Program Manager for Anti-Human Trafficking at the Salvation Army, Aaron Meyer, Hamilton County Job and Family Services Director, Moira Ware, and the Director of Lighthouse Shakely Center for Youth, John Kiefer. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. John, are there any specific stories that you can share with us about kids that you've worked with and what the outcome was for them?
Sure. Well, obviously, I'll change the name. And there's one particular story that has become the driving force for myself. And we'll see if I can get through it without getting choked up. The old copper gets a little choked up from time to time. But this really was the eye-opener for me. A significant portion of the population that we deal with are of the LGBTQ community. And quite frankly, going into it, you know, even though I'm accepting and had no issue, it wasn't a community that I had a regular daily interaction with, especially the transgender population. And when I first took over Lighthouse Shakely Center, that particular population was really the hardest to reach. They exhibited more antisocial behavior, a little more aggressive, really defiant and just angry in general. And I never could quite understand that. You know, we're the good guys. Hey, we're giving you food and we got the shelter. And why are you doing this? I couldn't quite grasp it. And one day, social workers will love this, but there was a moment of contemplation where I got to see through. This person had that, I know they hate this term, moment of clarity, but for me, this is how I explain it. I finally got to see the deeper issue that I couldn't see past the behaviors before, where this young lady, transgender, male to female, finally told me her story in the lobby, and in such a way that it tapped the heart to where I could understand. And when she looked at me and said, "Mr. John, good people judge me. I was born different, and all the good people in my life judge me. And as a result, I became homeless and I had to take care of myself. Bad people accepted me, but I didn't know they were bad at first. They came to me as a friend, as a family member. And by the time I realized that they were bad, it was too late. I was already caught up in this. And now I'd rather have that than nothing. And this is all I know." And as tears were rolling down her face, you know, I went to my office and wanted to throw my head into the wall because I didn't get it, and I'm the trained professional who should have been able to get it, but I didn't get it until that moment. And that set all of us on this path of we've got to understand more. We can't know everything, but we've got to have a bigger team. And that's when we really started getting work with all these agencies to say, okay, we can't know everything, but we need to be educated enough so we know enough to be in trouble, enough to understand. But we've got to make friends really quick so that we don't ever miss out on somebody who needs us this badly and maybe misses out because we didn't understand. And so that set us on the course of digging deeper and understanding more deeply. And you know, the transgender population or the LGBTQ community in general is a significant population that's homeless. And I believe that most homeless young people are at high risk for victimization because of survival skills. And the transgender population tend to pay the biggest price when it comes to terms of violence and exploitation. And they're the ones we see a significant portion of who work with us on the streets or engaged in sort of the sex work. And that was the story that really hit hard for me and my team that got us to really dive in to say, okay, we've got to come out of our box and learn more.
Sounds like it was quite an eye-opener, John.
Yeah, it hit me pretty hard, quite frankly, you know, just trying to tell a story without getting emotional because I still see her face. And, you know, and the God's honest truth is that, you know, good people, you know, you're good, upstanding people who, you know, talk about doing good things, looked at her and judged instead of doing what we're all called to do, and that's love one another. And as a result of people not doing that, she had to seek comfort in the bad. And that was a day when good lost. Good lost when that happened. And we got to reclaim that.
Did everything eventually work out for her?
Yeah. You know, it was a process. And it was a very tough process. I would say it's extremely more difficult with your LGBTQ community. I'd say the transgender population, you know, not that anybody's trauma is lesser, but it really is deep. I think it's more difficult, more time consuming to reach and find that. But with her, we were able to find housing, and that's our primary goal is how do we get you from the streets? How do we find you a safe, stable, permanent environment? So that's one thing we take away from you having to worry about, make an exchange, you know, for where am I going to stay tonight? So we take care of that, and then the rest, we start looking for people. How do we connect them to Aaron? Maybe we don't have a place in a shelter, but hey, do you have some funds for an emergency hotel? I need some new clothes. Do you have contact? If they're a former foster care child, then we're contacting JFS because there's a lot of services that open up. And so that's when the team really goes into that full triage mode and sort of the more deeper specialized services.
And I would just add to that I think, you know, what you're saying, John, and what Stephanie's question was about resources that are available. I mean, so some of it is not knowing that these numbers or these resources are out there. Some of it is knowing that they exist, but not knowing or realizing that they're resources for me. Me as a victim, not knowing that this is somebody who's being exploited. Me as somebody who identifies as trans and hasn't been accepted by anyone I can think of in my community besides this trafficker. How do I know that reaching out to Lighthouse is going to be a safe space? How do I know that reaching out to the Salvation Army or calling 2-for-1 Kids, how do I know that that's going to be the resource for me? I might know the number, but might not feel like that's a safe space. And it's not because it isn't, right? We're all sitting here knowing that, though obviously there's always room for improvement, that we're culturally competent in organizations, working to be as inclusive as possible, but recognizing that that might not be understood or known in the community. And particularly, you know, maybe my parents... maybe I've been through the JFS system before, maybe I'm scared to reach back out, scared of what's going to happen. You know, again, not because there's anything wrong with JFS, but that's the perception of the individual. And I think when we're looking at that, it's all of us working really hard to create that safe space, to have those conversations and make that help that person to realize that we are safe and that we are working for their best interest. Because as John said, when we're working with the trans population, for many of them, the traffickers, you know, as I said before, they're looking to fill that space, that gap, that what that person needs, whatever that might be. And unfortunately for the trans and the LGBTQ population, oftentimes that's love and acceptance for who you are. And traffickers, unfortunately, are exploiting that and are accepting that person for who they are, but then asking them to do things that they don't want to do. It really is this situation that when we're thinking about resources, not just everyone knowing what they are, but all of us as a team putting our faces out there so people know that we're here and we're a safe space to reach out to.
Do you actually have people who go out on the streets and do outreach work?
We do. The Salvation Army does, and I know Lighthouse does as well. There are a couple different agencies throughout this community off the streets that reach out to – that do street outreach. We're actually working with a couple other different agencies to do different types of outreach. So, again, recognizing that not every community has those tracks that we talked about where there's commercial sex happening on the street. Some communities, it's in the hotels. So we work with Cincinnati Police Department, the FBI, and other agencies to partner on doing outreach in those locations. But we also are working with some other agencies like Cincinnati Interfaith Worker Center and others to do outreach as it relates to migrant labor as well and day labor, because recognizing that foreign nationals who are being exploited, again, might not be at the same places as where we're going for street outreach. And we might need to make sure that there's some people who speak some different languages just in case that there are some language barriers there. So we have a couple different outreach programs that are in the works, but I know other agencies do as well.
Moira, it's obvious it's tough to identify child sex trafficking, but are there any signs that people should be looking for, any things that they should be especially aware of that might give them a clue that this is what's happening?
Well, the children typically, they're victimized. They might be, we've had cases come up to our attention that actually young woman that's now pregnant. But I think the things that both John and Aaron have echoed, isolation, they've already been victimized. They're fearful of, you know, and sadly we might have already let them down. They might have been in our system and we weren't able to really identify what was going on, and they might have seen that we dropped the ball, so they're going to be a little bit hesitant to us. They're going to people that aren't good. I mean, they're typically involved in drugs or the children themselves might have some mental health issues. And they're isolated. They don't have control of themselves, perhaps. Somebody's keeping their money. If they don't have a place to stay, they're helping them find a place to stay, or they're letting them stay there. They, too, could be getting abused by the person that's trafficking them. So they're just – I mean, we always try to tell people, if you're concerned about a child's safety, if you think something's going on but you're not sure, you know, please call 2-for-1 Kids to talk about the case. Give us the information. We might not have the answers. We're going to reach out to our partners to figure it out. And often in times in these cases, even when we open up a case, we don't really know what we're dealing with. And it's through our work with our partners, with everybody else, that we start to figure out what's really going on. So a lot of it is just eyes in the community, people seeing things, people seeing a child that perhaps see the same child here. You know, why isn't that child ever going home? Just to make the call, let somebody know that there's a child out there that needs help.
How's Ohio doing? I mean, is the state making strides in dealing with this?
I think Ohio is doing a great job. So before I lived here in Cincinnati, I worked in Washington, D.C. for Polaris Project, and I had a little bit – I had the opportunity there to get an understanding of kind of what the national perspective is. So granted, that was several years ago now, but Ohio even then was kind of at the forefront of doing of these initiatives. So the fact that the – you know, we've got all these grassroots initiatives that we're talking about here in Cincinnati, local agencies, you know, individuals like Stephanie who are working in mission groups and in churches and are doing their own initiatives, kind of students. We have high school students who reach out to us talking about how can they raise awareness and setting up movie nights and things like that. So people all throughout the greater Cincinnati area doing their own thing to kind of combat the issue, but then also the top down. So the Attorney General's office taking initiatives, the Governor's office, there's a state human trafficking coordinator through the Department of Public Safety. So we've got Ohio has a lot of committed people at all kinds of different agencies that are really working hard to standardize, streamline, and really work from all angles to combat this issue.
What more would you like to see happen, Erin?
I think, you know, there's always room for growth. I think the more that we have opportunities like this to talk about it, to educate people, to hear from people about what are the things that they don't know. You know, we know what we don't know, but we don't always know what other people don't know. And so learning about what people are seeing in their communities, how they want to get involved, I think the more that we can be educating people not only about sex trafficking, but labor trafficking, about demand reduction. So people wouldn't be purchasing commercial – there wouldn't be sex trafficking if nobody wanted to buy sex. So how can we – as and I know Off the Streets has the John School, but how are there other ways that we can be coordinating as a community to respond to all of the elements of sex trafficking, not just – and all of the elements of human trafficking in general, not just – child labor trafficking or child sex trafficking, but also all these other elements. How can we be working together to do that?
Moyer, what else do you think we need to do about this?
No, I would echo what Erin said. I mean, I think continuing to talk about this, I mean, any victimization of any child is important that we all have discussions about it in the community. We raise the awareness and figure out how do we end this so that there isn't a child in our community that's victimized, so that there isn't a child that's afraid tonight. Where am I going to sleep? How am I going to get my meal? I'm going to be safe. And so to continue to talk about it and have partnerships, have people willing to come together to figure out how to solve the problem.
John?
Yeah, I agree and would support everything that's been said. I think for me what our mission has been is building an army of eyes. You know, none of us have enough staffing or funding to be able to patrol every street within the county. And so what we have to do is really do what you're doing today and raise awareness and get people to just make the call. You know, if you don't really know, that's okay. People will screen it and we'll go through it, but make the call so that the people who are in the know who can help, if there is an issue, can be involved. And I think that's the biggest part. And as you saw today, we got to keep beating the pavement about 211 and all these ways to spread the information of, well, who do I call in this circumstance? And I think for us, just more awareness is key.
You think there's a reluctance for people to get involved in this?
Yeah. You know, even myself, if I see something, I think, well, should I call the police or not? I tend to err on the side of caution. I figure that's what the law enforcement's job is to do, is to, you know, say that, well, that call was wrong. But that's okay. At least we did something as opposed to nothing. And I think there is a reluctance. I think there is sometimes fear. And then there's I think some people don't want to wrongly accuse anybody of anything. And I think we have to get past that when it comes to young people. I think you have to do what's morally correct and let the professionals jump involved. And trust me, they're going to figure out and find out if this is a case or not a case.
And I would just add that we experienced that too, and that's part of why we wanted to work with law enforcement and others to kind of fill that gap in the community and provide this non-governmental confidential hotline, 513-800-1863.
So better to say something than not say something at all.
Exactly, yes. Exactly.
John, Moyer, and Erin, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Program Manager for Anti-Human Trafficking at the Salvation Army, Erin Meyer, Hamilton County Job and Family Services Director, Moira Ware, and the Director of Lighthouse Shakely Center for Youth, John Kiefer.